You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower 37 minutes later because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Coming up on Total Access, The Locker Room. Coach Singletary, right? I remember the game. You know, we all remember the game, you know, where he kind of threw you out of the game.
Yeah, that moment. I'd rather play with 10 guys than to play with someone that's all about himself. I want winners. I told brother.
Can't win with them. Welcome to NFL Total Access, The Locker Room. I'm Michael Robinson alongside Super Bowl winning head coach Brian Billick. Coach, what's going on?
Doing good, man. Digging out of all this snow.
I know. That's right, man. Well, guys, we're here to let you guys in on what players and coaches really talk about inside the locker room. Today, we're talking to my fellow San Francisco teammate and a guy I came into the league with, Vernon Davis, and he is going to talk about how he is a dominant blocker, how he became a dominant blocker, and how our long snapper gave him some of the best coaching advice that he could have ever got.
Yeah, we're going to find out that he's a true Renaissance man. There's a lot to Vernon Davis that a lot of people don't know.
And here he is. And Coach, this is one of my favorite human beings in the whole world, a good friend of mine, a former tight end for the San Francisco 49ers and the Washington football team, my good friend, Vernon Davis. Vernon, welcome to the show, big dog.
Oh, thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Now, look, Vernon, I can already hear it in your voice. I can already hear it, okay? This ain't the Total Access on TV. This is the podcast, okay? No political answers. Go all in. Let's hear about Vernon Davis. So, look, check this out. We start every episode with a locker room story, Vernon, okay? You know you my homie, all right? Watch what you saying on my podcast about me, dog, okay?
All right, go ahead. No, you don't qualify it that way.
Let's see your locker room story, big dog.
My favorite moment in the locker room. Gosh, I'm going to have to say, that's a good one, man. I can go so many directions with that.
Yeah, man,
after
anything.
For 14 years, it's just, I'd like to go with some of the pranks that we played back in the day when I came in 2006, right? There was a lot of hazing going around. I won't get into all that, but the pranks. One of my favorite pranks is when I put itching powder in about 10 guys' shoes with cleats when they went out.
Oh,
I mean, that was a good one because everyone was outside. They were taking their cleats off. They couldn't understand what was going on. It was amazing.
How did they get you back? Yeah.
How did they get me back? Oh, they got me back. I think one. Well, it was Brandon Williams. He put a snake in my locker.
Yes. Oh,
yes.
Yeah, it was a snake. Yeah.
and I think the next year, Vernon, somebody ended up putting Ben Gay or something in Patrick Willis's jock strap, and you know he was a 9-on-7, and he just couldn't get himself together. You know what I'm saying, Coach?
Some things never. I'm an old man, okay, and I played back and being around players. Some things never change, right?
No,
it's the same old stuff. Ben Gay and itching powder.
it's always like that. But Vernon, man, let's get into it, man. You know, the tight end position, I want to start there, man. Like, we came in 2006. You were the first draft pick for the San Francisco 49ers at the time. I was in the fourth round. You know, I remember seeing you crying and everything, you know what I mean, getting drafted fifth or sixth overall, something like that. I always tell people that, to me, you were one of those hybrid guys that helped transcend the position. What's the state of the tight end position now in your eyes, and what's the future for the tight end position?
I think right now you want to make sure you have that tight end, like kind of like Kittle. He's he can do it all. He's multi-dimensional, very multi-dimensional. He can block, he can catch passes. I mean, he can read routes. And that's what you want to do. You want a tight end that can create havoc for their opponents. Yeah, a lot of teams are going with linebackers who can run and do some great things. Mm-hmm. But if you have a guy like Kittle and he can you can do a lot of different things. You can flex him out wide. You can put him in a slot. You can put him in the backfield. Yeah, you can be very creative with that kind of tight end. And that's what we're looking at nowadays. And that's where I can see the future of tight ends continuing to be that of Kittle, if it's the mode of him.
You know, I was fortunate enough to have Shannon Sharp, who and obviously a great down the field guy. But Shannon will point out very quickly. He said, "Wait a minute now, I'm a pretty good blocker now too. I block for two 2,000 yard mm-hmm. rushers now, and Jamal Lewis and Terrell Davis." Talk a little bit about as a guy speed down the field, and that's what they're counting on. But at some point, you got to be an inline guy, and you got to get it done a little bit different. You're not going to overpower people necessarily, even though you're really strong upper body. Talk about how you have to, you know, approach it differently as a tight end when you're one of those kind of guys.
Yeah, I think, like I said before, you want to make sure you can do it all. You know, you want a tight end that can block because, you know, there'll be some games where you have to stay in and you maybe catch one or two passes, right? Because the coaches are expecting you to stay in line and block on the line. You have to be, there's some big guys up front. I mean, I remember when I was in San Francisco and the very first, when I first got drafted, we played against the Oakland Raiders. It was a playoff game. No, preseason game.
Yeah, I'm about to say it won't playoffs.
I had to go against Warren Sapp, and he let me have it, Michael. I mean, you were there, so you probably
yeah.
Yeah, that's when I had my wake up call. I was like, these guys, this is no joke. I mean, he was fast. They're fast. They're big. They're strong. So, being able to block is definitely a bonus because you're going to be called to do it, and it's mm-hmm. something you have to do, even if you don't want to.
Now, Coach, Vernon's being modest right now. I'm just being honest with you, okay? I don't know if Vernon remembers there was a time in 07 or 08, we were on the field, and you were telling me how our long snapper, Brian Jennings at the time, taught you how to block half a man. And that literally helped you, from a mental standpoint, dominate opponents. Could go into that a little bit. And I remember running the football sometimes, and you're having fun pushing people onto the ground, dog. Like you were amazing with it. And obviously, you have physical ability, but there was a technical part to your blocking.
Yeah. So Brian, I like that you touched that because Brian was one of those guys who really he was very. He was a big piece of some of the success that I had. He always taught me. He said, if you look at a guy, right, you look at his body, you put a line right down his body, and you take half his body, then you can push him the way you need him to go. You know, all of your strength and all of your body on one side of one half of a man. I mean, you're going to win. You're going to win, no doubt about it. And once it started to really hit me, I started to really put it all together, and it all made sense for me. I said, I'm going to do this every time. I'm going to reach when I have a reach block. I'll make sure that I get him, you know, get on him fast so that I can get all of my body on one half of his body.
Now, like Mike said, let's get real here a little bit, because I know, you know, fullbacks are a dying breed. Guys like our man Mike Robb here and I love a fullback-oriented offense. I love a tight end-oriented offense. But I also know when you have a big fullback like Michael Robinson, and you have a good tight end, and you're going to run that power, or you're going to run that ISO lead, that there's a lot of times, how many times did Mike Robb just run right up your backside and hit you in the back of the head, trying to blow a hole, because you're trying to pick a side, and he does it, and he just smacked you right in the back of the head. How many times did that happen?
Probably 9 times out of 10, Coach.
Yeah. Okay. I just wanted to make sure we were clear here.
Hey, Coach, look, I was a former quarterback, okay? I had not lined up in the eye, ran the football. I remember my first mini camp, me and Vernon, we were running around like chickens with our heads cut off, man. I mean, the North Turner's verbiage. Remember, Vernon, he kept us out there for hours afterwards, man, just running routes. But I want to ask you about one of the other former coaches, man. He's both of our former coaches, Coach Singletary, right? I remember the game, you know, we all remember the game, you know, where he kind of threw you out of the game. Talk about that game and how that changed kind of, you know, your approach to the football game, your approach to this game of football, because I remember we were playing Seattle and we were just getting the you-know-what beat out of us, man. We were terrible, Vernon. I ain't going to go into how bad we were, Coach. But we were bad. And Vernon just was messing around and Coach went off on him. Just talk about how that moment kind of really catapulted your career.
Yeah, that moment. I'd rather play with 10 guys than to play with someone that's all about himself. I want winners. I told Vernon.
Can't win with them. Nope.
Can't coach it. Can't do it.
I'm from the old school. I believe this. I would rather play with 10 people and just get penalized all the way until we got to do something else, rather than play with 11 when I know that right now that person is not sold out to be a part of this team. I told him that he would do a better job for us right now, taking a shower and coming back and watching the game than going out on the field.
That was a great moment for me, man. I can make fun of that all the time, anytime. He was really an integral piece in my life, and I say that because as a young guy, you think of it, Mike. You come into this league and you think you know it all. You think you have all the answers, but you have to learn to be a leader. You can't just step in and say, hey, I'm going to be a leader. You have to go through different things in your life. And when I came in the league, it was all about, you know, I felt like, it, in a sense, it was all about me. You know, I wanted to catch touchdowns. I wanted to catch the ball. I wanted everything to fall on me. But I had to look around and say, hey, there's other men on this team. And in order for me to be a leader, they have to respect me. And how can I get them to respect me is by putting them first. And once I learned that, my career started to catapult. I took off and I listened to Coach Singletary. And, you know, he just helped me. He was that, I want to say he was that father figure that I was missing in my life. And, you know, for him to step in and be able, and do that and see, that means he believed in me and he knew that I had the potential to do some great things in the NFL. And, you know, I just took his coaching. I respected him. And most importantly, I listened.
Yeah. Well, I brought Mike into the coaching profession. He was wanting to get back into coaching and he had reached out. And so I gave him his first job. It was a natural fit because I needed someone to coach Ray Lewis. you can imagine that room, Mike Singletary and Ray Lewis. But, you know, it was interesting. And I love the chance to visit with you because one of the things that Mike had to learn as a coach was – Mike would get very frustrated with players very quickly because they didn't have this level of passion that he thought. I thought, Mike, you know, with all due respect, I don't know there's a lot of human beings on the face of the earth walking around that have the passion that you have, that steely-eyed. So you gotta judge the scale a little bit here as you're dealing with them and not get frustrated because they don't quite bring it to that level that he famously made the Hall of Fame.
That makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and really, what role do you think you played personally, Vernon? I'm going to go back to this tight end thing. What role do you think you played personally in the ascent of the tight end? Because, again, you ran a sub 4.4. Coach, 250 pounds, you ran a sub 4.4. You know what I'm saying? Now, I'm not going to go into your hands when I first seen your hands when you first started catching the ball. I ain't going to go into that, but yeah, ball beating them up, Coach. You know what I'm saying? Like, just talk about where you play in this story of the tight end story in the National Football League.
Yeah, I think, you know, just having that speed, I've always relied on my speed, and that's one thing I had to learn once I got into the NFL. Having a coach like Norv Turner, he was like, Vernon, you can't just rely on your speed all the time. You have to be creative. You have to, you know, turn your shoulder to get around guys when you're releasing from the line. You have to, you know, just create the separation. Like when you get to the top of your route, you know, you can give a little move at the top. I was just running around guys because I was so fast. But I had to learn that. But the speed, my speed has always been the biggest part of my game. I say speed, then learning how to run routes later on in my career. Yeah, but I think that's the biggest part, you know, just that speed, man. You can't coach speed. That's something you have to be born with, and that's something I've always been blessed with.
And quarterbacks love, I mean, that's why tight ends are the quarterback's favorite target, because that's usually the best mismatch on the field. Whether the linebacker and you're going to be faster, they try to put a safety, you know, you can be more physical and whatever. The one thing you didn't get, and I'd like, because you alluded to, you know, Travis Kelce's been spectacular. And some of the great tight ends we've had, Gronk and Brady, they've been together a long time. They create that. You didn't really have that latitude, you know, to develop with one guy. You had to adapt to a lot of different quarterbacks.
Yeah. And you know what? I didn't pay attention to that to later on, you know, how important it was to have a quarterback. But you know, I believed in Alex's organization, San Francisco 49ers organization believed in him. So I just wanted to, you know, I was just cool with what I had. You know, I had to stick with him because he was my quarterback. I didn't want to say, hey, bring in another quarterback. Mm-hmm. But you're right. You know, maybe I, you know, I didn't have that opportunity to just stay consistent with a quarterback. Right. I remember that year when Alex got hurt. Oh, we went through so many different quarterbacks. We even brought Chris Winkie in. Remember that.
Yeah. I was the backup. Remember Vernon, I threw you some passes at practice.
Yeah. Man. Oh, man, that season was rough, man. Chris Winkie, Trent Dilfer, TJ. Yes. Then we had TJ Sullivan. O'Sullivan
a few years later, yep.
Yes, Mike Moss brought him over. Yep. And Alex Smith. I mean, we went through so many. And then we had, what's my guy named? Evans. The guy with he had the cornrows in his head. I can't remember his name, but Evans from California. I can't remember his name, but we had him. I mean, we went through so many different quarterbacks, man. And
Vernon, going back to talking about your San Francisco times, like what happened, bro? Like, all right, I left. I remember leaving in 2010, you know, and going to Seattle. And then we kind of developed this rival. You guys had Harbaugh. Pete Carroll had just kind of cemented himself. We went to the playoffs in 2010. And it was this, I mean, it was the coach, you remember, it was the best football in all of it, the National Football League, that NFC West rival. You guys went to the Super Bowl in 2013. We lost to Atlanta in the divisional round. I remember calling you and Patrick on the, you know, saying, man, I wish we could have got to you guys. Mm-hmm. What happened, man? Because it looked like that team was on on an ascent. It looked like you guys would be around for 5 years. And then it was a Super Bowl and then maybe the playoffs and then the team was dismantled. In your eyes, what happened?
Yeah, I think when you get to a situation where you have success, everyone starts to – guys can change. You know, it's hard to keep the locker room together because we feel like even though we didn't win it, we still feel like we made it somewhere and people saw us and they respect us. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then you have guys asking for more money and then you have all kinds of stuff happening like that, man. And then the upper management, they have to deal with it. So then they start moving pieces around. You know, you get a lot of egos flaring and all that. And then I know there was a situation with Harbaugh, you know, the team, you know, trying to figure out if they were going to keep Harbaugh or not. So there was just a lot of different pieces there that kind of made it it was sort of a distraction for the team. You know, there was so much going on. And when you have that, you know, the team can fall. You can fall. There can be a lot of things going on, you know, just, you know, mostly on the inside. So it's we just had a lot of that.
How good of a coach was Coach Harbaugh? Because it seemed like as soon as he got there, y'all started winning. I mean, I was a little mad looking at y'all like, damn, I was just on that squad. Y'all cut me, then y'all want to start going to the playoffs. You know?
Yeah, Harbaugh was amazing, man. He said cut me. Harbaugh was amazing. He's good at getting guys to do what he do whatever it is that he needs, right, from him, right? He's a player's coach. He knows how to lead a team. He know how to get you to follow. And that's what we did. We respected him. We knew that he had the formula to help us win games. And if you think about it, all the pain that we suffered from not winning, you know, all the ups and downs and, you know, the different quarterbacks coming in. So if you got a guy coming in like that, you can only – I mean, you want to pay attention to him because that's what we play for. The only reason why we play this game is to make it to a championship, right? Yeah. And when you're able to, you know, walk into a team, you already have the talent. I mean, because we already had the talent.
Yeah.
You know, he just had to add to it, right? So we had the talent. Now we needed someone to bring the best out of us, and Harbaugh was good at that. I remember the day he came out and he was dressed in full pads, man. He was going out there with the twos and he was playing quarterback. He was dropping back. I mean, that kind of energy is infectious. We saw that. We was like, oh yeah, we can go with this guy. We can ride with this dude.
Talk to us about your acting, man.
Yeah, come on, hear about this.
Come on, man. Hey, coach, I seen a lot of tears from this dude, man. I seen him cry when he first got drafted. He cried when he caught the catch. And you know, emotional guy.
He's doing romantic comedies now, or what?
All of that, man. Talk about your lead in Red Winter, man. What's going on with that, big dog?
Yeah. So when I retired, I decided to walk right into to acting because it's always been a passion of mine. I went to school at the Shelton Theater of Art, where I had an opportunity to study the craft. I was an art studio major at the University of Maryland. So as soon as I retired, I walked into a movie that I executive produced called Red Winter. Then I had another one that I produced called Message from Brianna. I just finished doing a movie with John Malkovich.
What? Thomas Mann. What?
Yeah.
How about come that? On. Hey, Vernon, put me on, bro. What are you doing?
There's got to be some alien or something like that, right? I mean, you can
put me on somewhere, man.
Yeah, so I just finished doing a movie with him and who else was in it? John Malkovich. Yeah, it's a great cast, man. It's a great cast. It's a dark comedy thriller. Sci-fi, and it'll be out. It'll probably come out around June. I can't wait for you guys to see it, man. I played a guy named David Reese, who takes care of zoo turtles. So that was my only job.
All right.
Yo, is there a sports story you want to like be made? I know you got a production company and all that. Like, if you could tell a sports story, mm-hmm. Out there, what would be a story that you want to tell?
You know, I have a good script that I wrote called Those Who Move Us. It's a script about my life, my story. It'll be a biopic or based on. I have about 90 something pages ready to go. So that's my next.
Wow.
Oh, wow. Great.
Yeah. That's my next big production that I'll put out between now and next year. I actually wrote a movie with one of my partners named Arlene. Arlene, Arlene Levine. She's amazing. Her husband did a lot of great things. He did Hercules. He was a part of Oblivion. Yeah, so I got a lot of things from the creative standpoint that's going. So, yeah, just putting it all together. Then I have a production. I'm a co-founder in a company called Players TV, which is all sports content. So, yeah.
You hear this, coach? Do you hear this, dude?
I know. I go on and on, man, in the content space, man. It's just, awesome.
I want to hear about Dancing with the Stars and why the cha-cha was so difficult. I mean, that got you bumped. Why? You're a great athlete. What could you not get?
Because he got two left feet. That's what it is.
You know what, coach? Let me tell you something, man. It was, dancing is totally different than anything I've ever done. Oh, my gosh. And then, you're talking 6 hours a day. You're just up on your feet training. And, you know, in football, we get a chance to rest. We go out for 2 hours at most. And then we go in, we get our massages and everything. But, man, I couldn't do that with the dancing, man. I'm always moving my body around.
You know, it was tough like that, bro, for real.
It was tough. And I think the toughest thing about cha-cha coach is that I'm stiff.
I don't believe that.
Dang, bro, that's crazy. Yeah. Man. It was Like, did it really require you to put the effort in like you did on the football field?
Oh, yes, I would say really? So. Yeah, because you got to think, because you get 5 days, Michael, to perfect this dance. And then, you know, from football, you know, we're perfectionists. So we're going to put everything that we can to make sure we go out and not look silly, right? So that's all I'm thinking. I'm like, gosh, I'm thinking like game day. You're thinking like football. Right. You're like, okay, I got to put as much work as I can. I got to feel prepared. I like to feel prepared before I go out there, right? Mm-hmm. So that's how I was, man. And you're just working, man. Then I found myself, when I got home, I was still up until like 1 a.m. just working on the craft, just working on the moves, because I wanted to go out and do a really good job. Even though it was something that I wasn't accustomed to, I still wanted to do a great job.
Right. Yeah, you wanted to show out, man. So before we let you go, man, last question. Bernard Davis Foundation, you know, there's a lot of players out here doing great things in the community. You've been down here to Richmond to help me and my community a few times. Talk about what the Bernard Davis Foundation is doing to help people out in the Bay Area and here back in the DMV area.
Yeah, so when I started out, I'm going to give you the background. So I started out with Bernard Davis Foundation for the Arts because I went to school for Art Studio. I wanted to give kids an opportunity to show their talent and express who they are, you know, who they really are, what they stand for. And I found that, just like myself, I found that a lot of kids were afraid to pursue the arts because they were afraid of people making fun of them. Mm-hmm. So we opened up Gallery 85, where kids could showcase their art. Half of the proceeds would go back to them and half would go to the foundation. So when I got to Washington with the Washington football team in 2016, I decided to change it because I wanted to, I changed it to Vernon Davis Foundation because I wanted to take a more holistic approach. I wanted to feed the community. I wanted to give back, get clothing drives. I wanted to continue to be a platform for the arts. I wanted to just reach a vast audience when it comes to philanthropy. And that's what I did. I decided to do that. And since I've been in Washington. I've been feeding the community. I've been giving back, partnering with different organizations, partnering with the Washington football team. It's just been awesome, man.
That's awesome, Vernon. Well, yeah. You know what, man? Thank you for joining this week's show, you. Man. This was awesome. And honestly, bro, I haven't talked to you in a while. This is the first time, Coach, that him and I have talked in a long time. I'm glad to see you doing your thing, man. You are a totally different guy than what we were in 2006, some young little hotheads that just got some money coming into the National Football League. Well, guys, that'll do it for this week's episode of Total Access, The Locker Room. For more insight with the locker room point of view, check out the latest episodes every Wednesday and Friday on Apple and Spotify.
You go into your shower feeling tired, but as soon as you reach for the Irish Spring, your day immediately gets better. That crisp, fresh, unmistakable Irish Spring scent zings your brain and awakens your senses. So when you finally emerge from the shower, 37 minutes later, because you pay the water bill so you can stay in there as long as you want, you're ready to take on the day and smell great doing it. Irish Spring Body Wash and Bar Soap. Fresh, green, Irish. Shop now at a store near you.
Calling all men. When was the last time you had a really good cry? A recent survey found that women cry on average 5 times a month, while men cry on average only once a month. Studies have shown that crying can support your mental, your physical, and your emotional health. I'm Radhi Devlukia, and on my podcast, A Really Good Cry, we embrace the real, the messy, and the beautiful. Listen to A Really Good Cry on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.